Welcome to the Holistic Career Change Podcast, one-stop shop for everyone feeling stuck in their career and who are looking to identify, change, and succeed at their new fulfilling work. I'm your host, Dilmo Seita. Let's go. Well, hello, career changers. How are you? If you're listening to this podcast as it's coming out real time, I think it's safe to say we're officially entering the Christmas season. Can you believe it? My goodness. The time is moving ninja speed lately. Am I the only one who thinks that? Today I have an episode for you that I've actually been meaning to record for some time. I was sort of pregnant with it and just took some time to give birth to it. But here it is. And I think I have mentioned about this phenomena, if you may want to call it, the phenomena of liminal spaces in the context of career change in quite a few of my previous episodes, but I feel like it really deserves a deeper dive. So here we are. So what I want to speak to you today about is those elusive liminal spaces. First of all, let me start by defining what a liminal space is. We all have an understanding what it entails or what it means, but my favorite perspective of liminal space actually comes from anthropology, so I'm borrowing their definition. And anthropologists view liminality as this quality of uncertainty, vagueness, disorientation that occurs in the middle stage of a rite of passage. And a rite of passage, or essentially a ceremony, a ritual, is where one individual leaves a group or a place to enter another. So that transitional middle stage. So liminality is literally that, the middle stage of the transition, when the person no longer holds his or her previous status anymore. But at the same time, he or she has not yet begun the transition to the status that they will hold when this rite of passage or this process will be complete. So to put it simply, they are in between, hang up in the air. And during this rite's liminal stage, the participants usually stand at the threshold between the previous way of structuring their identity, their time, community, and the new way of being, doing, and relating. So if you are in the middle of a career change, I'm more than certain you are very familiar with the space. And I talk about this a lot with my lovely clients. And if you're a future career changer, please don't tune out just yet, because you think it might not be relevant to you, but I want you informed so you know what to expect and how to prepare for it, because the liminal space, the liminal stage, is where a lot of people decide to opt out and essentially give up on their authentic dreams. Changing careers is a massive, massive transition. But what I think people don't expect is sometimes how long, how at times confusing and honestly even dark this period can be. And I do spend a good chunk of my time in my own practice normalizing the stage to my clients. Like, I spend a lot of time letting them know it's A-okay, this is exactly what it should feel like, and holding space for them and reminding all the ways in which this space, this liminal space, is so necessary, and how this darkness at times is not a tomb, it's a womb. I didn't come up with this quote, but I think it describes these in-between spaces so perfectly. So here's something that many people do not talk about. When you opt to look for another career path or a business opportunity that involves some sort of pivot of various degrees, and in most cases, or at least the cases that I work with, there's usually a massive pivot, like a massive career change going from one industry to a completely unrelated industry, you will spend majority of your career change process in that uncomfortable in-between liminal space. This is what people do not talk enough about. So say you are an accountant, and you realize that you actually want to do something more creative, but you still like the maths and the numbers, right? And then you decide, or you realize, that architecture is a path for you, is something that you've always been interested in. You love design, you love spatial planning, and you've just become so certain it's a new path. Like, it lights you up. You love researching, learning about it, talking about it. This is it. And that right there, the moment when you get clarity about that next move, or at least this kind of at first like foggy painting starts to shape into some sort of form, and you realize, okay, that's the direction. That's when you officially enter the liminal space. The dream, the promise of an aligned career usually then starts calling you so loud. You will want to work on your training. You'll want to start this new chapter of your career path yesterday. Like, you won't be able to hold yourself back. You'll be like, that's it. I found it. It feels so different than my current career. And yet the reality is that you're still an accountant in your day-to-day. So you can't quit because a million reasons, because there are certain commitments, because you need to be financially responsible. And then you find yourself in this middle of an identity shift. You're not an accountant anymore, at least in your heart and soul. Like, you have completely disconnected from that profession. But you have not taken the steps yet to solidify your new career as an architect. And depending on your transition plan, this place could last literally anywhere from several months to several years even. Right? And I really don't want you to underestimate how taxing a space like this could be. Because some of you may say, like, okay, what's the problem? At least this person finally knows that architecture is the thing for them. Like, I don't even know what it could be for me. Well, yes, that's a relief. But this next stage of liminality is where this person, let's give this person a name, like Susan, okay? I have nothing against Susans, by the way. My landlady in London, her name was Susan. She was such a character. Loved Susan. So Susan will be asked to hold space and contain this very triggering cognitive dissonance when she decides that architecture is her path, and yet she needs to stay working as an accountant for some time. Many of you know what cognitive dissonance means. If you don't know, having cognitive dissonance is simply put when we have to hold two or more conflicting thoughts, beliefs, values. This takes such a toll on us because our brain, our system does not function well in contradiction. It just takes too much energy to sustain two contradicting beliefs or values. So what it does in order to problem solve for it, it tends to reside to one or the other. So because choosing one belief, whether it's a supportive belief or not a supportive belief, our mind does not discriminate. It doesn't care. Just choosing one feels safer. Being on the one end of the spectrum feels better. Therefore, living in cognitive dissonance will involve a lot of flip-flopping, which can be super confusing to us, to different parts of our brain. The prefrontal cortex is like, what's going on? And here's what it will look like. One day, Susan will wake up super stoked about the possibility of becoming an architect, and she will be in this deep belief that is happening, and she'll be daydreaming and making plans and researching for schools, right? She'll be dreaming and looking forward to being in a more creative, project-based environment, and it will be like a visceral, whole-body yes experience, right? And then maybe as soon as the same afternoon, she may be like confiding in a dear friend about her dream to get into an architecture school and change careers. And her friend, no matter how well-meaning, but just not in tune with Susan's dream, may say something flippantly like, oh, so you're like ready to study part-time for like 4, 5, 6 years, however it will take for you to be able to transition into architecture. Are you sure about this? Right? Just a little comment, which is a projection, by the way. We spoke about this a lot in this podcast, but this little comment like that could completely throw Susan off. And then she's back on the other side of that cognitive dissonance where she's lost touch with a belief that she could, in fact, craft an amazing, fulfilled career for herself in a field she's aligned with. And then she feels like she's back to the drawing board where she doubts everything again. And when I say everything, I mean everything. Because this doubt can become so overwhelming, it affects virtually all areas of our lives. I lost count how many times when people are in the stage, like in the thick of the stage, they'll come into the coaching session and they'll want to talk about relationships because suddenly out of the blue, they start doubting their relationships or marriages even, right? And it's my job to contain and constrain and show them that a lot of the times the culprit, the core reason why suddenly they feel doubt everywhere usually streams from this situation about the career. Not in all the cases, obviously. I don't want to generalize, but it's, you know, case by case basis, I see how that's applicable. So this start, stop cycle is very common for the liminal space. It honestly feels like living in two different worlds at the same time. And once you've tasted what an aligned career feels like, and when I say taste, it could be just a shadowing experience. It could be started building your business. It could be talking to people who do this. Like you get like in the proximity of this new path, you then become increasingly disconnected from your current career to the point where at times it becomes intolerable to even show up there. It's so hard then. Some of my clients sometimes describe this as like dream versus reality situation where they feel like whenever they're back at their day jobs, it's like this veil is pulled upon them and they get this short-term amnesia about this dream that they've been weaving in the background. And then the old, familiar, outdated, out of alignment world just pulls them in and they forget who they are. Can you relate? It's only when they pull away, when they create space, whether it's over the weekend, whether it's on holidays, that they get to remember who the fuck they are. And sometimes, by the way, you don't even need someone else doubting you or like asking you questions about this new path. Your brain will do it for you. Rest assured, the gremlins are always there to do this. That's why we need to understand or at least know the basic principles of how our primal brain functions. So that, ladies and gentlemen, is what a roller coaster ride, a liminal space is. Isn't it fun? That space where you are not you anymore, and that causes a lot of suffering because that's confusing, and yet at the same time, you're not who you're meant to be yet. I'm sharing this episode because I want you to expect that this will happen and not be thrown into it and then make it mean that something went wrong. Because it's a very important stage and it serves its sacred purpose. And I'll go into detail about this in this episode. What I see often happening when people are in that liminal space is that they start doubting themselves, like I mentioned. They start doubting their decisions and the future moves. They think their doubt means that this path may not be for them. Like it's a sign that they should reconsider. And in some more extreme cases, they literally abandon the ship completely and just go back to the river of misery, when actually, in many of the cases, their chosen career path, the one that they're dreaming about, is the aligned path, but they're not aware of the flavor and the characteristics of this liminal space. And that's why I think this episode is so important to normalize it. If you're willing to feel these unpleasant, uncomfortable emotions of doubt, of uncertainty, of vagueness, and so many more emotions we usually avoid feeling, you will be able to arrive at the other side of this feeling where you will find empowerment and you will just feel different. But for that, it requires two things. For you to be willing to feel unpleasant emotions without trying to change them, or distract from them or run away from them. And it also requires for you to develop a skill of belief building. And I'll talk about it more later. Speaking about feeling and expecting the unpleasant emotions to come up. I'm laughing, but it's not funny. But this is just how I, if you've been listening to my podcast for some time, you know, I giggle in some like really inappropriate spaces, but just because I believe a lot of these things that I talk about, like they have a solution. And even though they seem really, really heavy and dark in the moment, once you're out of it and once the veil has pulled from your eyes, you're like, oh, I get it now. So that's why I'm giggling. I'm not laughing at you. I've been in your spaces, especially if you were at the beginning of this change. I know exactly just how painful it is. And I will never invalidate that for any of you. But going back to feeling those unpleasant emotions, That piece, I think, is where a lot of us struggle with the most, because it's in our nature and genetic predisposition to, number one, avoid pain. In other words, avoid unpleasant emotions. Number two, seek for pleasure. In other words, we need to distract, buffer with food, TV, substances, wherever can give us some sort of soothing. A lot of the times this is short-term soothing, like scrolling, right? And number three, exude as little energy as possible. In other words, often if we can choose between taking more action or less action, we will naturally, if we're not intentional, we will naturally be inclined to opt for less action. That's the motivational triad that I mention of about a lot, because I want you to know about it and know what your brain does when it's not supervised. Avoid pain, seek pleasure, exude as little energy as possible. And this motivational triad is our factory setting. Like this is how we were developed. This is how we evolved to survive. So we will be avoidant when it comes to intentionally going into feeling unpleasant emotions. When they come up, we will make it mean that something is off and we need to seek for pleasure. That's the first inclination. And honestly, if we kind of just like zoom out, as a society, we've been inundated with allopathic thinking. An allopathic paradigm is essentially driven and comes from the Western medicine, which is built upon this framework that wants to A, find, B, diagnose, and C, treat symptoms at all times. And this type of healing or allopathic paradigm has three main assumptions. Work with me here. This is important because I think that some dots will connect for you. Number one, assumption of allopathic paradigm is that any deviation, any even the slightest deviation from the norm means that there is some sort of disease or illness or something is off. So that's the first assumption. The second assumption is that whatever treatment that you get that's assigned to you should eliminate or reduce the symptoms of the underlying disease. And finally, the third assumption is that health is equivalent to restoring of the previous norm, meaning whatever deviation there was, we're assigned a treatment, we're diagnosed, we're assigned the treatment, and we know that we're healthy when we're back to the previous norm. So while this approach may at times serve us when we heal our physical bodies, right? We want to see the diagnosis because we need to know what medication or surgical intervention we need. But even then, I think we're extremely intolerant to the diversity of bodies and systems that we have. But that's a completely different topic. But the issue, the reason why I'm bringing this out here, because the issue here is that this type of allopathic thinking is that we also end up applying it to our emotional life. And that happens so subtly. So when our emotions deviate, when they are not normal, for instance, when we feel lower, when we feel sad, when we have doubts, when we don't have energy, we make it mean that something has gone wrong. And we apply this pervasive allopathic thinking because we start thinking what could be wrong and we start diagnosing ourselves. Right? Could this be like, you know, my abandonment issues? Could it be like this? Could it be that? We do that a lot, especially a lot of us who are in this community or who are interested in self-help in all shapes and forms of it. So as opposed to accepting and getting curious and inquiring while being grounded in this deep wisdom and acceptance, right? Which could look like, my body is tired. I wonder what could have made my body want to rest more. I wonder how I could create more space for my body to rest more. And maybe even if I don't know the answer to why my body is tired today, I am in total acceptance that today is the day when my body chooses to be exposed to people less and to be in its own energy more. And it wants to be horizontal more versus vertical. I honor that, right? As opposed to that, we usually go into what's wrong with me? I need more coffee. This is so fucking annoying. And I hear this a lot, by the way, from type A clients, especially, you know who you are, right? They hate not being productive. They hate not doing because their value is tied to doing, not being. So every time they're not doing, they think they're being useless. So that's a deep worthiness issue there, right? And okay, also overachieving is a trauma response, but above all, this relationship of attaching meaning and labels to this wide variety of states is abusive because we're constantly intellectualizing and seeking for some sort of diagnosis. That's abusive. That's the opposite of acceptance. That's the opposite of unconditional love. That's the opposite of trust in our body, in our system, in our energy, in our feelings. What if nothing has gone wrong? What if that's exactly what it should look, feel, and taste like at this stage of your journey? This thinking of diagnosing and healing has become parasitic in the way we approach situations, people, and especially ourselves. And unfortunately, the same approach also has bled over the years into traditional therapy world and even in coaching industry. And I'll be the first to admit it. So when we hit this important stage of liminality, going back to the career change, we often get so impatient and we question what's wrong with us. We question whether we even want a new career, because if we wanted it, we wouldn't be feeling low and confused and doubtful, right? We start diagnosing as opposed to dropping into that grounded curiosity and trying to understand the underlying intelligence of this stage, the sacred intelligence and purpose of it, because it has it. So first of all, the reason why you go through this liminal space has so much more to do with your inner transformation than the actual outer career change. The outer career change, the moves that you make, is just the top of the iceberg. The actual change happens under the water, underneath. And that's what the liminal space is for you to sort out all of the transformation that needs to happen that is not seen by the naked eye. And a lot of you are coming home when you look for aligned career. You're going back to aligned, purpose-driven paths or businesses where you will be creative, massive impact in this world. You'll be changing structures. You'll be introducing new paradigms. You'll be providing healing, offering services that never been offered before. You will build new, beautiful things. This is not just a career change. It's a rebirth that will be preceded by a period of, figuratively speaking, death. Death and rebirth cycle is very prevalent in career change. Death of all of those parts that you don't resonate with anymore. And yes, that will involve behavioral patterns, patterns of relating, traumatic responses, friendships that take and don't give. Sometimes even family members that you'll have to learn how to set boundaries around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are so much. Because to each of you, this will look very differently in terms of what it is that you will be asked to address. And word of caution, by the way, this part is tough. And that's where everything resurfaces and kind of slaps us in the face at the same time, as if people get so discouraged. But I want you to look at it like that. If you want to take a seat at the authenticity table, this liminal space is a price you pay. This is the preparation, the initiation, the inauguration. It's a ceremony. And if you want to skip this part because of what we talked about earlier, because we're preconditioned, right, to avoid unpleasant and uncertain spaces, if you want to skip this part, if you want this to be quicker, and haven't met anyone who doesn't want this to be quicker, by the way, you may end up simply creating the opposite result by prolonging your overall change process. Because this is the part we can't skip. We can't hide from it. We can't fool anyone around it. It's going to happen. And I talk about this part more in depth in the Dark Night of the Soul episode and Career Change Alchemy episode, in where basically I describe in more depth how this transition takes place, what the stages are, what to expect in each, what are emotions associated with it, what are the outside circumstances that you can expect when you're going through this quote unquote death and rebirth cycle. So if you haven't listened to those, go there and listen to those. All of this inner transformation, all of this inner reconfiguration of years of programming, conditioning, people pleasing has to take place. Those parts that don't serve you, that are in the way of you owning and embodying, for lack of a better word, your power, they will have to be seen, met, accepted, integrated, and transmuted. If that is, you want a sustainable long-term career path, that is your mission and your purpose and meaning. Because if Susan wants to switch from accounting to business development internally in a different department, then probably she can avoid all of this dramatic purification. People often ask me, okay, so say that I'm okay with this liminal space, say that I'm like, I can tolerate it. How long will this take? Here's my honest answer. I have no idea. I have no idea how long it will take you. Because it depends on so many factors. And honestly, this process has no clear beginning and no end. Because on some level, this is what we always do as human beings, this process of death and rebirth. So what I'm saying here is that this process will intensify before career change. And it will ask you, sometimes force you to focus on healing all those aspects that are in the way of you embodying this new career. Okay, this is what I can say. If you still want a range, I can give you a range. So what I've seen, the fastest has gone from several months, someone who's done a lot of work, who's super self-aware, who could kind of like literally dive in, all the way to over several years, 2 years and plus. I've seen that in my practice. So it really, really depends. Usually people are somewhere in the middle between the two. And this phase, it's not here to punish you, to hurt you, to confuse you. It doesn't have any evil agenda. On the contrary, this liminal space, the purpose of this phase is to purify you, to help you, and to prepare you. And I know some of you who are in the thick of it, especially right now as you're listening to it, including myself, by the way, some time ago, you may find yourself looking up at the sky and dramatically asking, why me? How long? You know, I can't take this anymore. And I get it. My sincere hope is that you listening to this reframe will help you find some grounding and meaning, or perhaps even you'll find a completely different perspective shift around this necessary phase. You're going through it, so parts that no longer serve you can die off. So you could be released, and the new version of you, the more in tune, aligned, authentic, truthful, coherent version of you could emerge like a phoenix. There's a lot of symbolism around this process. And I think sometimes people who have not experienced this sort of in-depth, holistic career change that requires many, many, many layers of you to be reviewed and to change, they think or they underestimate the depths to which they'll be asked to go into and certain things that they'll be faced with, right? And that's the reason why their resistance comes in, because when they start experiencing that they're being taken that way, they will think that something is off, when actually that's exactly the pathway, the path that we need to take. So how do you deal with this space so it would hurt a little less? Expect it. Expect that it will be part of your path. Be prepared for it. Don't go into that automatic allopathic thinking of diagnosing these quote unquote deviations in emotions as a problem that needs to be solved or cured. Prepare for it. Plan for it. Make wise preparations. How do you plan for it? Simple. When you are in this liminal space, give yourself more time to breathe in your day. Don't overplan. Don't overcommit. Introduce lots of breathing room to feel and process daily. Double down on self-care. Include all the rituals that make you feel taken care of. Book them in advance if that involves other people. Leave weekends open. Allow your intuition to take you places or to offer you things, whether it's activities, people, or nourishing foods. Honor your practices that help you clear and process, like journaling, breathing, meditating. spend lots and lots of time in nature. I cannot emphasize this enough. If you follow me on Instagram, one of the things that you'll notice about my feed, at least my stories, I'm in nature every single day, almost every single day. You know, if I miss one day, it's like one day a week that I could miss. There's a reason for that, because no matter where you're at, what season you're in, nature is a healer. It regulates you. If you can, if the weather permits, walk around barefoot, right? And I talk about it's probably in other episodes about earthing. That regulates your nervous system. That allows you to drop in, to calm down. Expect that you will have some days of extreme low energy, and low energy will attract extremely low quality thoughts that you will literally take over, and you will start questioning everything. Expect that those thoughts will come when you're feeling low, and don't make it mean anything. I always tell that to my clients. I have low days. I'm a human being. I have low days and I have very low quality thoughts. And you know what happens in those days? I let them thoughts like kind of just run like a radio on the background, and I just don't pay attention to them. I'd be like, thank you for your opinion, but like these are very mean, unsupportive, low quality, low energy thoughts. They're not serving me. And I understand what's happening, right? I can step out a little bit, create space, and say, I'm not feeling well, my energy is low, and it only makes sense that my thoughts are reflecting my energy. But what a lot of you do when you're on those days and you start, suddenly you hear those like questioning mean thoughts, you suddenly jump into the pool with them and you start believing them, allow them to drag you to all the places, to the point where you're like, without even realizing, a week has passed and you've been in complete autopilot engaging with these thoughts. Expect that they will come, but don't make them mean anything. Because these low energy days usually is the days where the integration and the inner growth is the deepest. Don't punish yourself when you're in those days. Just love yourself. Because the more you can lean into it, the more you can take in and reconfigure. This phase does not last forever if you resist it less. It's like healing, like any other healing. Imagine when you cut your finger, do you put a Band-Aid on and then reopen it every 5 minutes to check if it's healing? And then you see that it's not better after 5 minutes. Then you're like, are you getting annoyed that seeing it's not better? You don't. What you probably do is disinfect the wound, put a Band-Aid on, and then you trust that the body will do what it needs to do to heal it. Our body, our whole system is designed for healing, right? So what you do, you put the Band-Aid on, you try to protect the finger, you avoid water, you don't, like, you know, the whole hand, right? Like you will try to move it less. You will be giving it and protecting it and giving it space for the body to do what it needs to do. Can you do the same with the liminal space and the emotions that are coming in? Or are you going to reopen the Band-Aid every 3 seconds, checking if the wound is healing and then getting annoyed that it's not? Can you trust that this liminal space is working on your healing? Because that's what it is. It's healing so you could adjust to the new spaces, the new ecosystem that you are entering. Kind of like a plant. You know, when a plant is replanted to a bigger pot because it's been outgrowing the pot, it will take a little bit of time for the plant to readjust to the new space. But when it does, it can then go stronger. The roots can grow deeper and it can grow taller and bigger. And that's what liminal space is for. So here's my prescription to help you with these liminal spaces. I have 3 things that I want to tell you about. The first one, like I said, expect it, prepare for it, and don't make it mean that something has gone wrong. Be patient with it. Create ecosystem and space for you to be able to drop in and roll with it and flow with it. If you're going through it, it's actually a sign that things are going very right for you. Not that things are going wrong, but the things are going very right for you and you're undergoing a massive inner change. So that's the first one. The second tip, learn how to stay with and feel uncomfortable feelings. The uncertainty, the grief that you will feel of the past version of you, of the past life that you'll be building, the confusion and so much more. How could you embrace it? And how can you learn to find some comfort in these uncomfortable spaces? Because when you reduce the resistance, reduce the pressure to feel good, that's when things can flow and rearrange. So number two is learning how to feel and stay with uncomfortable emotions. Google emotional vipassana if you don't know how to do that. I don't know. Do I talk about this in my podcast? Let me know if I don't. I could do an episode about that. And the final one, a very important one, is work your belief system as you go through the liminal stage. Work your belief system as if your life depends on it. Never stop holding a belief and cultivating new beliefs around the new career that you are creating and about this transitional process. Choose to believe it's working out for you. Choose to believe this is exactly where you're supposed to be. Choose to believe in yourself. Choose to believe in the better future you are creating for yourself, your family, your extended family, your future generations that are coming in. The life, the career that you want is sometimes one belief shift away. Working on your thoughts and beliefs, if you ask me, is not optional. It's an integral part of this process, alongside with feeling and releasing feelings. These two are the backbone of this process. And if you don't know how to work with your thoughts and how to change your beliefs and how to use neuroplasticity of your brain to your advantage, I have three episodes on thought work. I think Thoughts About Career Change is called. So there are three episodes, like start with the first one and work your way up because they build upon each other. So I talk about thought work and their belief work, and I go in depth on it and give you the background, the tools. I tell you how to use them to double down on this work. It may seem like a lot at first, but only until it becomes a habit and you learn how to manage the brain so it serves you versus giving you contradicting orders, which it might be doing right now, giving you contradicting orders and confusing you. You've got this. I have this unwavering belief in you. The fact that you have a dream for a better life, for a more aligned career, means that you have access to it. So please don't be put off by the process of getting there. I like to imagine these liminal spaces in career change as a river that you have to cross. So imagine you're trying to cross a shallow river, for instance, and there's no bridge. You're on one bank of the river and you need to get to the other side of the river. So you take off your shoes, you roll up your trousers, and you go in. And you start slowly placing your feet one after the other. You're getting wet, the water is cold. With every step, you're exploring the bed of a river, making sure that you don't step on sharp rocks or glass or whatever, and making sure that you're not cutting your feet. It's unpleasant. The water is cold. You don't know what to expect when you put your next step. The water is wet as well. And you may be annoyed that there is no bridge. And yet the only way that you can get to the other shore is continuing placing one foot after another. Calmly, slowly. And your mind, your brain may be telling you that, oh, the water is so cold, it's uncomfortable, let's go back. Well, what if like we could find a bridge? Well, this is so stupid. What if I get ill? That's your brain's job, is to protect you. Your job is not to always listen to your brain. Because your brain is just doing its job. It's trying to keep you safe and it's trying to keep you alive. It's fulfilling its purpose. So you can hear it out. You may slow down. Right? Because not all of what your brain is telling you is nonsense. It's right. Like all it's giving you, yeah, these are possibilities, right? So you can slow down, but continue putting one feet after another, always with the end goal in mind, the other shore. Thank your brain and continue taking the action while feeling these uncomfortable feelings until you reach the other shore. And when you're on the other shore and you look back, you'll be excited, you'll be proud, you'll be relieved, you'll be thankful that you've made it. That is what the liminal space of career change is. Okay. I feel like sometimes in my episodes, I'm talking people out of purpose-aligned career change versus talking them into it. Again, I'm preparing you. This can be done. A lot of my clients have done it. I know you will be able to do that too. I'm just giving you a little bit of a manual to know what to expect and how to walk through this. I know that you're talented, beautiful people. Please don't stop midway through this river. Please don't turn around. Continue putting one foot after another and keep your goal in your heart and in your mind's eye. Don't get distracted by how cold the water is or how uneven the bed of the river is. Or if you step on something slimy, feel it, breathe into it, and then continue. Your freedom, your alignment, your fulfillment, your career satisfaction is on the other side. Just continue walking through the damn river of the liminal space. I love you so, so much. I want you to win so badly. Sometimes it hurts. Sometimes I stay awake at night thinking, how else can I serve you to help you reach that other shore? If you need support along the way, do reach out. I have a lot of free resources. I also have spaces in my one-on-one practice. There is a waiting list, but if you commit now, you can at least know that you will be starting the new year by starting to put these important building blocks for a new career of purpose. Be good to yourself, and we'll speak soon. Thank you for spending time with me today. If you'd like to take this work further and have my one-on-one support in changing careers using my easy holistic process, head over to the show notes and book your consultation call to be added to the waiting list to work together. Can't wait to meet you.